The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. This and other great health talk shows at RadioMD.com. Here are Joe Galewski and Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And you are tuned in to the radio program that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. It's you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. I'm along every week to learn as much from Dr. Mike as you are every week. I'm Joe Galewski. Thank you for listening today. To reach Dr. Mike on the show today on the phone, 877-711-5211, 877-711-5211. udocs@gmail.com is the email. We have a lot of medical news, interesting medical news to tell you about. We have emails from you that Dr. Mike will answer today. And the most exciting news today is we are now on iHeartRadio Talk. Now, what is iHeartRadio Talk? Well, this is an extension and a unique dimension of the iHeartRadio platform. I'm sure you've probably heard about iHeartRadio. This delivers for you fully customizable on-demand talk to you if you go online or on mobile devices. So this is really a great way to experience your favorite shows and personalities and hear what's going on in the world of health today. So you can add Radio MD and You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, to what they call the Daily Pulse on iHeartRadio Talk. This is a special news and updates station that you can customize. And you can try it out for free. This is nothing you have to pay for. Now, try it out for free. Go to iHeartRadio.com and download the app or use it on the web. For example, if you use it on the web, what you do is click Talk, the word Talk, in the main menu, and then search for this show, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on iHeartRadio Talk. This is a way, Dr. Mike, for millions more to get your message on top of the millions more that listen to your message all the time now.
Well, you know, Joe, not only that, but on my TuneIn, T-U-N-E-I-N radio, which I get through a free app on my iPhone, you can hear all the old shows, the archive shows of this, so you don't have to go to RadioMD.com. But, of course, you're welcome to go to RadioMD.com. But it's also live on TuneIn Radio as well as on iHeart Talk.
This is a great extension of the iHeart Radio venue because iHeart Radio Clear Channel invention a couple of years ago has been so innovative in bringing music and customized radio stations to people based on their needs and their likes and their wants. So now the natural progression, natural extension is to include it into the talk community. So this was just the natural thing to do. The iHeartRadio Music Festival is one of the biggest festivals in the world every year now. Every September in Las Vegas, you may have heard about that. So just some amazing extensions of the iHeartRadio venue. This is iHeartRadio Talk. And again, if you go on the web, you can click Talk in the main menu and then search for You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We are so excited and so happy to be part of iHeartRadio Talk, and you should give it a chance very soon. Coming up at 35 past the hour, we have a guest every guest segment, and it'll be Dr. Eric Bing. Dr. Bing is co-author of what's called Pharmacy on a Bicycle: Innovative Solutions for Global Health and Poverty. What can you preview about the guest at 5:35, Dr. Mike, or 35 after the hour, rather?
Well, this is a book written and endorsed by Clinton and Bush, et cetera, but it is how to bring the advances in medical care to places around the world largely, but places that can't afford them. And I'm going to talk to him about how to bring the advances we know about, that is the routine things we know about, such as how do we get obesity under control in the United States, and how do we save hearts here without even the pharmacy. That is, how do we take what he's learned in bringing better medical care, usually very inexpensively. Essentially, it's using business practices to spread medical care inexpensively. How do we do that with our own population so as to save us, so we don't have diminishing educational, social programs, and even impaired defense? See if he can come up with something that we need in the United States.
Dr. Eric Bing at 35 minutes after the hour. Pharmacy on bicycle. And again, we have a lot of great informative medical stories of the week to get to. Also, we have, of course, your emails, questions, Dr. Mike's answers to your questions. Where are the cities where the most people have heart attacks?
Well, Joe, do you know the answer to this, or are you just asking me to set me up?
It was a question, so I don't know.
Well, the interesting thing is, what would you think are the characteristics of the cities with the most heart attacks?
Probably the cities that have the greatest amount of poverty.
That is one component, but it actually is a minor one. Okay, so now let me go and ask you the rest of it. Where do you think the next greatest are?
Oh, man, I didn't come prepared today. What's the question again? May I delay by asking the question again?
Well, it is, what cities do you think have the highest heart attack risk?
What cities have the highest heart attack risk?
The highest... This is actually phrased in a different way.
Cities in the South.
We actually know the answer to this. Where do the most heart attacks occur?
Cities in the South.
Why do you say that?
Well, probably, and I don't mean to be rude about this, maybe less educated people with regard to health issues, maybe less fortune economically, people who have less money, maybe people who don't make as much money need to buy more inexpensive food, more fast food. I would say that area of the country would be near the top.
Yeah, so you are right on some of it. It is people where there is highest blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, and smoking. And so the number one, we'll do a countdown. Number five, Charleston, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
It has 6.3 heart attacks in the percent of people in the last 10 years who live there who've had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Amazing, right? 6.3%.
Yeah.
It has 24.2% obesity, so it's lower. 19.2% obesity. 19.2% smoking rate. So it's above the national average in both of those. And a medium income of $44,000. The next lowest, or the next highest, 6.6% of the population of Utica, Rome, New York, near where you live.
Wow.
30.1% obesity. 26.7% smoking, an income of $45,000. Then the next one is Fort Smith, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, that general area, 6.7% heart attacks, 28.9% obesity, 25.8%, $35,900. The next one, Davenport, Moline, Rock Island, Iowa, and Illinois, not in the South.
No,
it's
Midwest.
The one that, obviously, Utica isn't in the South, and it isn't in the South. 6.7%, 26.3% obesity, 21% smoking rate. And the highest, drum roll, please. Let's see if I can get a drum roll here. I think I can get a drum roll.
Very good.
Huntington, Ashland, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. And to show you how high this is, it's 8.9%. 37% obesity, second highest in the nation. 30% smoking, second highest in the nation. $36,000 medium household income, one of the lowest in the nation. So those three factors combined, 8.9%. The national average, believe it or not, is under 4% of people have had a heart attack. So that's more than double the national average.
No city in the South there.
Well, West Huntington, Virginia's, Ashford, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio is kind of south. And so is Charleston, West Virginia.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of all six through 10 are in that south.
Well, listen, can you get too much exercise? Dr. Mike will have the answer to that question. And more medical news stories coming up on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
You tune up your car and change the oil when it's running sluggish, right? Well, then how come when you're feeling low and sluggish, you aren't doing something about it? D-Herbs can help with their full body cleanse or dozens of other healthy all-natural supplements and products. It's time to finally do something for you. Take a look at D-Herbs quality all-natural products and you get a free gift. Famous D-Herbs all-natural all-herbal cleansing tea and an ebook with important life-changing information that you can download. It's called The Power of Cleansing. You can heal from any disease. Just go to freedherbs.com. That's free, the letter D, herbs.com, and claim your free herbal cleansing tea. You just pay a small shipping fee for that. And then you can download your free ebook on the wonders of healing cleansing. You'll also get a 15% off discount code if you should decide to make a purchase. Free gifts for you, plus a special gift of better health. freedherbs.com. freedherbs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes, March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
Hi there, I'm Juliana Rancic.
And I'm Bill Rancic.
I love my job as an entertainment reporter, but what I love even more now is being a new mom.
And you are a great mom. I'm very proud of you, honey.
Thanks.
Like any responsible parent, Juliana and I wanted the best for our little son, Duke, and that includes a healthy future. We know firsthand that life is pretty unpredictable. We didn't anticipate getting Juliana's cancer diagnosis or even having challenges with pregnancy. I don't think anyone does. Mm-hmm. But as parents, we can plan for the unexpected.
That's why we want to share our decision to bank Duke's cord blood when he was born. The blood in a newborn's umbilical cord contains millions of young, valuable stem cells that are used to treat childhood conditions like cancers and blood diseases and are being studied as potential therapies for cerebral palsy and even autism.
Julianne and I are proud to partner with Cord Blood Registry and the Healthy Futures Campaign to help raise awareness about the value of cord blood and the options for saving or donating it.
We encourage you to take action for your family's healthy future. Go to parentsguidecordblood.org.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're brought to you every week by Morning and Night Multivitamins and YouBeauty.com. And again, proud to be part of the iHeart Radio Talk family right now. iHeart Radio Talk. Dr. Eric Bing at 35 minutes after the hour. His book is called Pharmacy on a Bicycle, Innovative Solutions for Global Health and Poverty. We'll get there with some of the top medical news stories of the week. How about too much exercise? Can you get too much exercise, Dr. Mike?
Well, this was a study of marathon runners and triathletes, and they found that, and I may be a little off on the number, but they looked at all of those people who competed in a 10-year period in Sweden, and I think there were 53,000, you believe there are 53,000 people who participate in a marathon.
Yeah, 53,000.
And it was a ski marathon, so it was a 56-mile ski marathon that they participated in. And 1.7% of them had a serious heart, abnormal heartbeat in that 10-year period, which was much greater than you would expect from their age-matched controls. And so it was said, is this a risk? And most of the arrhythmias were actually atrial arrhythmias. But they then exposed a series of rats to a similar type, and they did get increased arrhythmias. Now, exercise protects you against a huge number of things. But in fact, you can get too much exercise. So when you go over, when humans go over a period of 2 hours in a day, 2 hours together, that is a 2 hour period that's 2 hours in a row, that is without breaks, such as you might get in a marathon, you end up exceeding your capacity to buffer the bad things that you produce when you use too much sugar, that is when you use too much energy. And you end up having not as good a result as people who do 1 hour of exercise, for example, in both longevity and avoiding disability. So the answer is you can get more than too much exercise, and it appears in the studies to be if you exercise for more than 2 hours in a row in any one day.
You know, in the marathon, they call you get to that point of the marathon, the 26-mile marathon, where you hit the wall. Whatever that may be, it's all probably individual in terms of everybody who runs in a marathon. Is that at the point where maybe you're getting too much exercise, the wall, when you run a marathon?
You know, no one has characterized that. But so what you bring out is this an individual thing? That is the amount of capacity your cells have to what we would call buffer, and it's not necessarily an acid-base buffering, but to buffer the bad stuff your cells, the free radicals your cells are producing. And we don't know whether that is the same point as when you hit the wall. Though hitting the wall usually means you have too much lactic acid produced and you are exhausted from actually having to breathe out the acid to buffer that acid. That's a different buffering than your free radical buffering. So I don't know how well they correlate, Joe, but they may correlate very closely.
I see marathon runners when they run to get to a point where even the most athletic and in shape marathon runners get to a point where they defecate on the road. You know what I mean? On the street, and they lose their bowels. I mean, that can't be good for your body, can it?
No, it's not good for your body. That's correct.
It's kind of giving you a signal.
But that is actually, that point of exhaustion is a vasovagal one, where you're actually having a abnormal nervous system response to the amount of exercise you're doing.
I mean, your body gives you signals. Every time something isn't going, you know, normally, there's a signal that your body sends, and that might be a signal your body's not doing.
I don't think that's a good signal.
No, I don't think that's a good signal right about that. Skipping breakfast, I thought this was a great story. Skipping breakfast may increase heart attack risk. I'd like to hear more about that one.
This is, again, one of these interesting epidemiologic studies where they look at large numbers of people. And they looked at, in fact, you know, it's not as good as the study on, if you will, the worst cities or the cities with the highest heart attack rate. But this was in a study of older men, and those who skipped breakfast had about a 25% increased risk of a heart attack. So a little increased risk if you say your risk in the next 5 years is 10%, instead it would be 12.5%. Or if you said your risk is 20%, it would be 25%. It was a study of about 27,000 men. So it's a large study, but not that great. But it does tell you it's pretty easy to eat breakfast, right, Joe? You even eat it?
Well, I do. It's a weird time to eat breakfast. some people are out coming home from a night of celebration at 12:30 in the morning. I'm eating breakfast at about 12:30 in the morning. What I read about this study was, I think the risk group consisted of a lot of smokers and drinkers. I mean, how do they? So is it a case of correlation and not connection? I mean, how do they know that skipping breakfast among these people was part of the equation? And again, is this study more based on inferences rather than sciences?
The answer is it is based on inferences, but it is, because it's so large a group, 27,000 guys, it probably has some validity. So is it as good as what we call intervention studies, where we give, 1,000 guys one thing and 1,000 guys another and see what the difference is, or treat, malaria in 1,000 people and don't treat it in another 1,000, or treat it with another disease and see which, another drug and see which works better? No. But it is, because it's 27,000 people, and it was based on prior health history, prior dietary history, it probably is correct that there is an increased risk of heart disease in skipping breakfast. So you say, well, how good are the data? Is it 25% or is it 40%? And the answer is, what difference does it make? You either say, I'm going to skip breakfast, or I'm going to stop skipping breakfast because of this data.
Does skipping breakfast, do you think, generally, does it mean loading up more at other times of the day?
Well, it may mean that you're eating unhealthier food at other times of the day. It may mean that you get fatter. There are a whole raft of things that happen when you skip breakfast. So people who don't eat breakfast probably are more likely to be hungrier later in the day and eat larger meals, since they didn't decrease the calories or their weight compared to the control group.
Now, the other question is, okay, we're talking about breakfast, which is another general statement where you have to include what type of breakfast, right? I mean, if you eat breakfast, but if you're eating breakfast of, the bacon and eggs and, that kind of thing, and the toast with butter and everything, I mean, that's got to be consideration, too. Even if you do eat breakfast, that kind of breakfast, that's not the right thing to do either, is it?
Joe, you're right, but the studies on eating breakfast find an independent effect of breakfast, independent of what you have for breakfast. So if you have, the worst breakfast versus the best breakfast, still eating breakfast is a benefit. So even if you have a lousy breakfast, now obviously you get a secondary benefit and a much larger benefit from eating healthfully as opposed to eating saturated fat and sugar-laden bonbons.
Yeah, the better thing to do would be the healthier breakfast of whatever that may be, as opposed to what you might find at an overnight joint with, stuff that grandma and grandpa used to eat all the time when they were living. Right? I mean, bacon, eggs, and toast, yes, and coffee and butter and everything,
yes,
like that.
Yes, but remember, even eating those things is better,
yep,
than nothing.
Yep, put something in your belly when you start your day. Okay, Eric Bing, Dr. Eric Bing, his book is called Pharmacy on a Bicycle, Innovative Solutions for Global Health and Poverty. He's our guest coming up on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening, and stay well.
My story may help you. This is what happened. I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. Since it had gone on for a couple of weeks, my friend said I had to go to the doctor. Of course, she was right. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. To make a long story short, by realizing something might be wrong and seeing my doctor right away, I received treatment. Now, we're confident I'll be fine. Please, please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Uterine, cervical, ovarian, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers. Signs and symptoms are not the same for everybody. So get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Knowing can make all the difference in the world. It did for me.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout. Give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Every 4 minutes, over 50 kids under the age of 5 die in the same 4 minutes. Two mothers lose their lives in childbirth, and every year malaria kills over 1 million people, despite the fact that it can be prevented with a mosquito net and treated for less than a buck and a half. Now, sadly, this list goes on and on. Millions are dying from diseases that we can easily prevent, and expensively as well, and diagnose and treat. Why is the question? Let's get to the answers and more. Dr. Eric Bing is the director of the global health at the George W. Bush Institute and the professor of global health at SMU, Southern Methodist, in Dallas, Texas. He combines his training in medicine and business to help solve global health challenges. He's the co-author of a book called Pharmacy on a Bicycle, Innovative Solutions for Global Health and Poverty. Dr. Bing, we're happy to have you here today. Whoever came up with the title of the book is a genius, and I'm interested in that. Pharmacy on a Bicycle, what does that mean?
Well, Pharmacy on a Bicycle is really about how do you get solutions for healthcare to people in ways that is accessible to them and was affordable to them, and to really be innovative and entrepreneurial. And we see many people putting pharmacies on bicycles simply to get care to people. And this is the kind of innovation that is happening all over the developing world and is now beginning to save lives.
It's an attention grabber, just the title alone. Congratulations on that. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
Dr. Bing, when one of the examples you use is of the NIH Heart Hospital or Heart Process Hospital in Bangalore, India. So I visited it last year and talked to their cardiac surgeon and anesthesiologist because they say they can deliver cardiac surgery for roughly $2,000 a patient. At the same quality as we do in the United States. So obviously the Cleveland Clinic is known for heart care, and a lot of our processes, that is just the plastic tubes, et cetera, that we use in heart-lung machines and the drugs cost us more than, considerably more than $2,000 just for our forgetting time, forgetting operating room expenses, forgetting blood usage, forgetting anything else, just the plastic tubing and the mattresses and such that we use cost us more. And so I was curious, how much of the reduction in costs that you've seen, and I don't know how closely you studied this, but you use it as an example, how much was due to personnel cost reductions versus supply cost reductions, and can we, what can we learn from this?
Well, that's an excellent example. You know, and the example that you're talking about, Narayan Hrudayala, which is a cardiac hospital in India, back in 2001, really began trying to save lives to cardiac with patients with cardiac disease in India by opening a for-profit hospital and really reducing prices through efficiency. And, you know, cardiac care is really important because if you sort of think that we're losing about 13 million people a year just from cardiac disease, but this is actually a major issue. One of the things that they were really focused on is how to use business models to improve efficiency. And so, therefore, one of the things that they've been able to do is to reduce costs through personnel by task shifting. Activities that might be done by doctors or other high-priced people to much lower-priced technicians to really reduce the amount of time that doctors are not working and are not doing things that doctors don't need to do in seeing patients. But they're also able to create efficiencies by manufacturing many of their own products. And so they, in some ways, take out the middleman. With some of these things. They also are really focused on making sure that doctors know exactly how much money they're making, because the way they see the poor is by making enough money on the wealthy that they can support the poor from the overflow. And so they get feedback every single day about how efficient they're being in the care that they're doing. And that kind of feedback loop, I think, is very, very powerful in helping the physicians make decisions about how they spend their time and what they do.
So part of the ability to lower cost, as I take it from that, is a shifting from, for example, surgeons or first assistant surgeons to technicians and to lower the costs of personnel, and then actually the personnel earn less for the same position in India. But another part of it is, in fact, manufacturing their own tubing and their own drugs at a much lower cost for that tubing and drugs than they did in the United States.
Absolutely.
So the question then, and I don't want to get in the ethics of it, but obviously in the United States, we charge more, for example, for the plastic tubing, and I don't think it's any better, but it obviously has some patents associated with it and proprietary information that allow the pharmaceutical company and the drug and the device manufacturer to raise the prices. How much is related to that versus, did you ever get to say, what would be the equivalent cost if we brought this process and procedure to the United States? Or is that, were you not able to do that?
Well, one of the things that that NIH is able to do, so I think it's more than just that. Because, you know, NIH's cost of a cardiac surgery is about 5% of what we charge here in the U.S. but they're also significantly cheaper than other cardiac hospitals in India. So in a place that actually has all the same resources and all the same opportunities, they're being much more effective in delivering care. And that has to do with the business processes that they've done, that they've worked around all of their services. So it's more than just cheaper products. It's the way they're using them, the way that they're employing them. And what they're doing, NH was really, really good at this. But they're not the only one that's doing this. You also have another organization called Aravin that came years before, 20 years before NH, and did the exact same thing in cataract care by focusing on the business of healthcare. They were able to significantly reduce cost of health cataract surgery so that many, many more people, very, very poor people, can actually get cataract surgery.
Well, what is impressive is that they actually use some of the profit to support people who are poor and having it for free. Let me go to another question, which one of the titles in this same heart chapter brings up, the elephant in the room, non-communicable disease. And I look at the elephant in the United States and say 75% of our medical cost is due to our own choices. And obviously it's crowding out social programs, it's crowding out education and defense now. How do we use what you've learned to change our behavior patterns enough to have us reduce a substantial part of that 75%?
Okay, that's actually a really great question, because what you're talking about is that much of the disease that we see in the U.S. is due to some of the choices that we're making, whether it's smoking, whether it's lack of exercises, or the things that we're eating. I think one of the things that we have learned in developing countries is that as we move things from clinic-based and doctor-based to community-based care, people in the community are able to be much more effective at supporting each other and getting people the care they need. I think if we sort of look at even the work on social networks, that's been done here in the U.S., is that if we're around people who smoke, if we're around people who are gaining weight, then we do it too.
Well, come back, Dr. Bing, and we'll take more of that. We're talking with Dr. Eric Bing, one of the two authors, along with Mark Epstein, of Pharmacy on a Bicycle, a fascinating book on innovative solutions for global health and poverty. Wonderful examples.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to greatstartgtl.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at greatstartgtl.com. That's greatstartgtl.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to greatstartgtl.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most.
Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only one in five girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Eric Bing is the co-author of Pharmacy on a Bicycle, Innovative Solutions for Global Health and Poverty. The publisher is Barrett Kohler Publishers. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
So when we got rudely interrupted by the break, Dr. Bing, we were talking about how to use the social networks or community networks to try and change our obesity and our heart disease and our cancer problem in America. That is 70 or so percent of our total healthcare costs come from chronic disease treatment that's under our control by managing stress, eating smaller portions and of healthier food, doing physical activity, and controlling or stopping tobacco usage. How do we get that done? We've been 50 years with tobacco, with every kind of outreach, and we're just, I mean, if we spend 50 years in doing this, we won't have education left in the United States the way the cram down is occurring.
No, absolutely, and I'm really glad that you're raising this, because I think it's a major challenge that we have here in the United States. As I was saying, one of the things that is happening in developing countries is that care is moving from the clinic to the community and from the community to the household. And that's exactly what has to happen here. Is they're doing it by necessity because they can't afford it and they're having significant improvements in health. We're also going to be having to do it by necessity as well. And it's something that actually works. You know, for now, I was actually just sort of thinking today, is, you know, I went running this morning as part of a marathon team. And the reason I got into it is I was walking down in my neighborhood and I started talking to a woman who was walking a dog, and she was doing it, encouraged me to do it. Well, this is actually an organization that is run by a running club. It's a running club, a for-profit running club. But they actually get people together, and the reason we do it is to have fun. But by having fun and by doing this, we're also losing weight. We're getting better cardiovascular health.
But will we be able to do this fast enough? Is there a tipping point in this? Meaning, is there some point at which we'll all start to do this? or are we going to, I mean, Mayor Bloomberg gets criticized for being nanny state-ish, if you will, because he's limiting the size of sugared beverages, which is just so obvious that that we've got to do this voluntarily if we don't do it. But he said, we can't do it voluntarily. When do we hit the tipping point? How do we get to that point in the United States?
Well, and I think that this is going to really have to happen community by community, household by household. And I think that's actually one of the things that has begun working in developing countries. It is definitely supported by the government, by putting policies in place often that will support people to do this. And often it is supported by nonprofits and even for-profit organizations that are using these government supported initiatives to actually help communities. But ultimately, it has to be the community that says that we're going to do something to better lives.
So do we have to hit the same type of crisis point? In other words, you point out in one of the chapters, and it's a brilliantly written chapter, A Mother's Touch, Maternal and Child Health. In Table 9, you have this great task-shifting government health services for women and children and how this went to trained workers and essentially it's a 1 million community health workers to cut maternal and child deaths by probably 45 or 50% if you look at it overall. They cut maternal deaths in Rwanda by 60%, child deaths by 58%. In Ethiopia, maternal deaths by 50%, child deaths by 26%, Brazil 31% each. So how do we have to hit a crisis? Is there any way of doing this before then? Because all of these countries really hit crises in maternal and child death.
And I really do believe that we do not have to hit a crisis. As we take control of this, things begin to change. And in each country that you talk about, there's a slightly different approach because the culture is different, the government is different, and things that you can do are different. In Rwanda, it was very largely a government-supported initiative that then got everybody else on the same playing field. In other countries, it's actually been a very different approach, whether that is an NGO that leads the way or a for-profit corporation that may lead the way. Each country is going to do it a little bit differently. And I think the same thing is true here. Each state will do it differently. And within each state, each community will do it slightly differently. And I think having options for communities to choose and then moving forward is the way we're going to have to go. But what I think is important is recognize that government has a role to play, nonprofits have a role to play, and businesses have a role to play. And I think often we sort of think about this as that it's either one or the other. It's not that at all. It's really all of us.
And that's really the lesson of Pharmacy on a Bicycle, how the three sets, business, non-government organizations, and government, can work together with the community to radically change health. Joe?
Yeah.
Dr. Eric Bing, the book is called Pharmacy on a Bicycle. It's published by Barrett Kohler Publishers. Let's get in, if we can, the Real Age Tip of the Week with Dr. Mike.
And this week, it's 10 ways to get more benefits out of your workout. When you're in a time crunch, you want to get the most out of every minute you spend working out, right? I know I do. And although there are a few ways to do this, here's the most important exercise safety rule of thumb. Always, always follow good form. Never sacrifice form for weight. Never sacrifice form for time or intensity. 1, think Botox. Keep your face relaxed and tension-free. 2, keep your gaze at eye level. The simple move prevents neck strain. 3, relax those hunched shoulders. Drop your shoulders as low as they comfortably go. 4, lift your chest slightly. 5, lengthen your spine. Imagine a string pulling on the top of your head up to the ceiling. 6, tighten your abs. Strong abs help support your lower back. 7, never lock your knees. Keep knees slightly bent. Always keep your toes lined up to prevent overstressing your knees. 8, breathe. Count reps out loud to avoid holding your breath when you do resistance exercises. You inhale, relax your lower abs and fill your chest. As you exhale, suck in your abs to force the air out. 9, keep moving between exercises. It keeps your heart rate up. And 10, as you get stronger, work out more. With cardio, go a little longer, a little more intense. With weights, add more reps or lose slightly heavier weights so you don't have to do it longer. The Real Age Benefits, a physical activity program that builds stamina, strength, and flexibility, as well as cardio, makes you your real age for men as much as 8 years younger and women 9.1 years younger. And that's the Real Age Tip of the Week, Joe.
Okay, Dr. Mike, listen, miss a show, miss a segment, miss a guest. You can never be in that position. Go to RadioMD.com and check out You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And also now we're on iHeartRadio Talk. Try it out for free. Go to iHeartRadio.com and download the app or use it on the web. Check it out. Have fun with it. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.
You tune up your car and change the oil when it's running sluggish, right? Well, then how come when you're feeling low and sluggish, you aren't doing something about it? D-Herbs can help with their full body cleanse or dozens of other healthy all-natural supplements and products. It's time to finally do something for you. Take a look at D-Herbs quality all-natural products and you get a free gift, famous D-Herbs all-natural all-herbal cleansing tea and an ebook with important life-changing information that you can download. It's called The Power of Cleansing. You can heal from any disease. Just go to freedherbs.com. That's free, the letter D, herbs.com, and claim your free herbal cleansing tea. You just pay a small shipping fee for that, and then you can download your free ebook on the wonders of healing cleansing. You'll also get a 15% off discount code if you should decide to make a purchase. Free gifts for you, plus a special gift of better health. freedherbs.com. freedherbs.com.
Hi there, I'm Juliana Rancic.
And I'm Bill Rancic.
I love my job as an entertainment reporter, but what I love even more now is being a new mom.
And you are a great mom.
Thanks, honey. Very proud
of you, honey.
Thanks.
Like any responsible parent, Juliana and I wanted the best for our little son, Duke, and that includes a healthy future. We know firsthand that life is pretty unpredictable. We didn't anticipate getting Juliana's cancer diagnosis or even having challenges with pregnancy. I don't think anyone does. But as parents, we can plan for the unexpected.
That's why we want to share our decision to bank Duke's cord blood when he was born. The blood in a newborn's umbilical cord contains millions of young, valuable stem cells that are used to treat childhood conditions like cancers and blood diseases and are being studied as potential therapies for cerebral palsy and even autism.
Julianne and I are proud to partner with Cord Blood Registry and the Healthy Futures Campaign to help raise awareness about the value of cord blood and the options for saving or donating it.
We encourage you to take action for your family's healthy future. Go to Parents Guide. CordBlood.org to learn more.